No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and wherever it is that you're listening to us, we want to thank you in advance. We as fans have always appreciated your input as fellow fans. When you're happy, we're happy. When you're upset, we are too. But sometimes we're just a little bit more honest. We are the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine, and Cody Paulson coming to us from Houston, Texas by way of Ponte Vedra, Florida. Cody, how are you, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening in. The fans can find me on Twitter at TheCodyPaulson. I'm doing all right. A little Sunday night baseball. I'm not going to lie. I kind of forgot that we were on Sunday night this week. I thought we had the Cardinals series and that was it for us for the year. But always nice to be able to be under the lights on ESPN, get that national broadcast and attention. Terry and Charlie, how are you guys doing tonight?
Terry?
I am doing well. The fans can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. And ESPN probably could have dubbed tonight's matchup, the dumpster fire main event, because we both are. Mets the bigger dumpster fire, though. Probably out of the playoffs at this point, and we'll be shipping off Verlander and Scherzer here in the coming days. But Red Sox are tied for last place with the Yankees. 8.5 games back from the division leading, wait for it, Baltimore Orioles. Both teams are 2 games back from that third wild card. So, yeah, and about Scherzer and Verlander, ESPN kept mentioning their no trade clauses. Do you think Scherzer and Verlander are like, nah, I don't want to go anywhere. I love it here in Queens. I love not winning and not being relevant. You know, those guys will want to, go to a team that can contend. And I don't know. It'd be funny if Verlander ends up back in Houston all along.
I've been saying that I thought that Max Scherzer was going to finish his career in L.A., and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Dodgers land somebody like that. Here, we'll completely take his entire contract. We're not going to give you anything, but we're just going to help you shed payroll. And then we'll suck up the $43 million each of the next 2 seasons. Yeah, we'll take Verlander too. We'll take them both, $86 million. And that's going to lock up the Dodgers for being one of the top 2 teams in the National League, guaranteed core 4 finale. If that happens, you're looking at Braves, Dodgers, possibly Orioles and Rays for your final 4.
And Scherzer, I'm not going to say he's washed, but he's not the same guy. Gave up 4 home runs to the Red Sox.
Yeah, it's his worst appearance of the year. That's literally what I want to chalk it up to. He's an incredible pitcher, super talented. And I was so angry years ago when we didn't get him, almost 10 years ago, when we decided to get Hanley Ramirez and Pablo freaking Sandoval. And I thought, wow, with all that money we could have gotten, or we paid those two guys, we could have had Max Scherzer back in 2015. And this is before multiple 200 plus inning appearances. He had 220 innings, 3 out of 4 years when he went to Washington. And I was just kicking myself thinking, man, we messed up so bad, so bad.
Probably wouldn't have ended up with David Price the next year had we gone with Scherzer in 2015. And I think Scherzer definitely would have been a lot better in the playoffs. But
right. Absolutely. So why don't we start the party? Cody, why don't you go lead off here? Share with us who you had for your stud.
My stud for this series has got to be Chris Murphy. And, you know, this kind of sounds like a broken drum for me. I keep kind of going back to the well of the long relief or the, you know, the middle reliever guy. But when 40% of your rotation at this point in time in the season is to be determined, we're trying to come up with, you know, something funny to talk about in the series preview. It's an opener and a bullpen day. Any guy that can come in and give you not only length, but competitive innings is a stud in my book, right? You know, this is, I think, what, our 14th ranked prospect in the farm system coming up. He's got a 1.8 ERA, right? He went 3.2 innings. I think it was, what, 3 hits, 1 earned, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, and, you know, kind of kept the game in check until we were really able to break it up in the fourth inning. These appearances are really just fun to watch as, you know, Boston fans that have been kind of burned by the bullpen in years past, right? To have guys, to have arms come out of, you know, right field and not only be competitive, but really kind of set the tone and shut things down. Like, there wasn't a lot of drama in those innings, you know, for the Mets offense, which is great. It allowed the, you know, our offense to rack up an insane amount of hits. I think we hung a career high hits on Carrasco in what, like 3.2 innings or something like that. So the stud for me, Chris Murphy, he's been a revelation. I think he was a mid-June call up, and he's just been nails, never more than two earned runs given up when he's been on the bump.
Terry.
Murphy has definitely impressed me, because if you go look at his Worcester numbers, not good. You know, ERA over 7. I was thinking, you know, they called him up out of necessity. I mean, we were hurting so bad. You know, Sale was out, still is out. Whitlock was out with one of his injuries. I don't know if Houck was out yet, but you needed a body in there that could pitch some innings, and Murphy has done that. I'm a little concerned. I mean, his outing was a little shorter than, you know, what we're accustomed to with him, and wasn't really punching guys out. So we'll see what his next few appearances bring. But again, did the job. Just gave up the one earned run. That was the only run the Mets scored all night in the finale. And we'll see. I don't think they're going to be comfortable starting him anytime soon. And he is a starting pitcher. That's what he has been. So we'll see. I guess what I'm worried about with him is the second and third time through the order. And I bet that's what Cora and Bloom might be concerned with, but, you know, in somewhat of a bulk role one time through the order, he's been phenomenal. He's better than, I know Winkowski had a pretty good series, but, you know, he'd been getting slapped around, and I would say Murphy is higher on my trust tree than even Winkowski is at the moment, even based on his recent, good outings.
Yeah, Murphy's actually been really, really consistent. If you even want to call it a blip, he's had one bad start or one bad appearance. He's been a full-time reliever since he's joined Boston. After you mentioned, Terry, was just not good in Worcester, had an ERA over 7. And like you mentioned, out of necessity, we just needed an arm. And he's really proven himself. He, I think, became the first Red Sox reliever to start three straight appearances of two innings or more without giving up an earned run. So already he had that going for him. And then you put in his two last appearances against Oakland, 7 2/3 innings, one run on four hits, five walks, kind of not pretty, but 10 strikeouts. His ERA was 1.69 before today's appearance, and it just barely jumped up to 1.8. So he's gotten up to the almost four inning mark or past it three of his last four appearances. So they're trying to stretch him out and give him just that little extra bit. We needed somebody to go a minimum of three, four innings, and Bernardino and him combined for just over five. I'm super pumped. I absolutely love it. I mean, Winkowski shut the door in the end of the what is it, sixth inning, I think. So let's keep riding it. I mean, we know that we're kind of a bullpen team right now because we don't have five starting pitchers. So if he can continue to do that, we're going to be able to at least save face a little while longer. Anything else you want to add? Yeah, Cody.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you touched on a great point, right? They keep trying to extend him, you know, a little bit longer. How long can we get this leash to go? And, you know, he kind of got into a little bit of trouble, brought in Winkowski, shut the door. But each inning he kept coming back out. I was like, oh, man, we got him again. We got him for another inning. Like, each time it was just a little bit, you know, a little bit more surprised that we kept seeing him. And he, you know, kept getting the outs, kept turning the lineup over. So just, you know, credit to him for kind of continuing to grow and learn on the fly at, you know, the major league level for – which is definitely not easy.
And Murphy was in there, you know, just long enough for the Red Sox to kind of pile up some runs. And why that was crucial was it kept Nick Pivetta out of the game. And presumably he'll pitch on Tuesday as the bulk guy in the first Atlanta, first of the two Atlanta games.
Yep, absolutely. Terry, who'd you have for your stud here?
I am going with Rafi Devers. He was 5 for 10 on the series, drew a couple of walks, which is nice to see, because if Devers is drawing walks, that means he's being patient. He's not, you know, swinging out of his cleats, and had a solo home run today. Was just absolutely crushed over the bullpen and into those right field bleachers. He's really turned it on in the last, you know, 4 weeks. I mean, just the last 15 games, hitting .386 with a .453 on base. His season OPS is 120 points above the league average. So, firing on all cylinders. If you're going to make a case for the Red Sox to snag that third wild card or even beyond that, you know, this version of Devers is going to be one of the vehicles to get to that point. It's hard to do it with the inconsistent Devers that we saw in, you know, April, May, and June. So finally back into form and, love to see it.
Cody.
It was interesting to me that we never lost the home run production. We never lost the runs batted in, even when he was swinging out of his shoes, right? You know, he was up and down in three pitches or, you know, a line out in one pitch or whatever it was. And we're like, man, what is going on with Rafi, right? He's over aggressive. He's batting close to Mendoza line. Like, you know, we're like, okay, maybe there's not enough protection on the lineup, or, you know, maybe, you know, he's trying to do too much press to be a leader or whatever it is. And this new approach, this seemingly quote unquote revamped Devers, which is really just kind of the Devers we knew and grew to love, which was a patient hitter waiting for the mistake and being able to flick pitches that are not hittable to the monster or, you know, deep into right field like he did tonight. I mean, obviously that ball was up and in and he just turned on it. But it is just great to see Rafi kind of settle back into the player that he has always been for us here in Boston and not feel like he needs to do anything extra and kind of lead by quiet example. I don't know if he's necessarily a super vocal leader. We haven't really kind of had him in that role long enough to understand, but it's just good to see him turn it on, and obviously he is a special offensive talent.
I don't think we're ever going to see, or it's going to be a really, really long time before we see somebody like Rafi Devers again. If anybody had the opportunity to listen to him in the third game, it's like he's a kid the whole time. It's like every day is a fun day for Rafi. He's laughing. He's sitting around. They're asking him what his relationship was with Alex Cora. And he goes, just like a kid would respond, you know? And he goes, oh, Ale. Like it clicked when he realized it. He's just having fun every single day. And I think if he's able to bring fun to the game, he's going to start destroying the baseball. Terry, you just said his batting average is what, 386?
In the last 15 games, yeah.
That's stupid. That's absolutely dumb. I mean, last month he was hitting, over Mendoza. You know, Cody just kind of talked about that for a brief moment. The last couple of months, he's been building one month after the next. And the month of May was ugly as sin, was not hitting home runs. He had like one big home run day. He had the two homer game against San Diego. Outside of that, only one more home run for the whole month. It just completely disappeared. But now this month, he's 20 for 54 before action tonight, hit an absolute bomb to right field at Fenway Park. It's just, you're starting to see what $300 million should get you. And it's an elite hitter that is scared of nothing, swings harder than literally anybody you're ever going to see. He's just super exciting, super fun. And he got a hit in every single game. He's trying to do everything he possibly can to help his team win games. So perfect. Anything else? Yeah, Terry.
He was mic'd up tonight with ESPN, and his English is good enough now to where he understands what they're asking him, but he typically will still respond in Spanish. And I can't wait to see, the English speaking Devers at some point, because he's probably going to be the funniest guy on the team, I feel like. And you see it just in his demeanor. You know, he's a fun, happy-go-lucky guy, when things are going well, at least. And so I just can't see, I don't know. I just can't wait to see that.
When David Ortiz first started playing baseball, I don't remember if his English was all that great either. He didn't go by David Ortiz at the time. He went by David Arias. So some people may not even remember that. That's how far back we're going to go with this one. But I think that's something that comes into time, because Masataka Yoshida, before he was, before he played today, he was given an interview with Perez in the dugout, and he was answering the questions through a translator. And then one of the things he responded in English. So I think Masataka Yoshida does speak a little bit, but not enough to where he feels comfortable. And I will never blame somebody for not wanting to speak in a foreign language if they don't feel comfortable. You're a professional athlete. You're not there to speak the language. You're there to play a position or play a game. As someone who spoke English as a second language, I completely understand and I completely get why they're doing what they're doing, because they're going back to a position of comfortability. I don't think it's right for anybody. And I'll say, I don't care who it is. If you're going to insult someone for speaking back in, their native tongue because they're comfortable, shame on you. Not saying you're doing it, but shame on you if you do, because you have no idea what it's like to have to speak in give an interview in a foreign language. Yes, you're speaking the language of the, that's the most commonly spoken language in that country, but that's not why you're there. You're there to play a game. And there are universal signs and codes that everyone can make regardless of what language they speak. There are multiple languages that are spoken on the Boston Red Sox. There are multiple languages that are spoken on multiple baseball teams. I'm never going to call anybody a dud just based on the fact that, they spoke a certain language other than English, because at the end of the day, if we really want to know what he's going to say, we can find out. It's not that hard. It really isn't. And believe me, it's as difficult as it is for them to have to do it, it's 10 times more difficult for us to have to do it in what language they speak, probably naturally, just period. So I'm very vocal about that. I've shared, the fact that English for me was a real struggle. It was very, very difficult, because if you speak another language first and then you go to English, the words of English, like when you're putting them together, are actually inverted. They're all wrong if you're speaking Spanish or Portuguese, Italian, one of those languages first. So when you learn English after having learned Spanish or Portuguese or Italian and you think it's going to click, it's absolutely not going to happen, because the order is all inversed. I can go on and on, but I will shut up.
With Yoshida, though, it's probably harder for him because he's learning a new alphabet. And so
Very valid.
I think Devers is going to be further along. But I do think there will be a day where Devers is talking to Jamai Webster, you know, in English. They're going to be bantering back and forth, and it's going to be hilarious.
I hope that the first time he does that interview, like they ask him a question and then Devers responds to the translator in English. And then the translator starts saying what he said in English. And it's like, what? Okay. Like one of those kind of funny moments. That'd be kind of cool. But you know what? I think everybody should just enjoy the ride. Appreciate that it'll take time. Enjoy the journey. When it happens, it'll happen and it'll be awesome. It'll be biblical. He's still going to be slaying it in 5 years, 6 years for the Red Sox. Easy. So, yeah. Anything else that we want to add about Devers? Right on. Cool. So my stud for this series, and I am shocked because I've bagged on this man, and I owe him a major apology, is Tristan Casas. And it has been the Tristan Casas show. In this series, 6-for-10, that second game, 2 home runs, his first multi-home run game, and he happened to get it against Max Scherzer, one of the best pitchers in the last decade plus. That's an incredible moment for this kid. He will never forget July 22nd, 2023. I hit 2 home runs against Max Scherzer, and they were not cheap. One was just moonshot, just dead center, just perfect. Hit it right on the button. And for the rest of the series, he's been doing great. Still had 3 singles, had a triple, 5 runs scored. I feel like we're talking about Jaren Duran when we hear 5 runs scored, but just he's getting it done. The only at-bats that didn't go for hit were strikeouts. So the strikeout numbers are still a little bit, but you know what? If you strike out 4 times, if you hit 2 home runs in a 10 at-bat, you know, series, you really have to be mindful about what you're going to insult and what you're going to call out. This is someone who just did not, it just wasn't clicking. We were calling for him to get sent down because he's hitting 150. And just this whole month of July, tearing the cover off the ball, he's been destroying everything. So I'm going to continue to ride the high. I appreciate Tristan Casas doing everything he did this series, because without him, I don't think it would have been as enjoyable. But that's my stud right there. Cody, anything you want to add?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's putting together good series now, right? It used to be, oh man, maybe we can just string together a couple of good at bats. Yeah. He drew a walk. Great. Now let's make contact. You know, we were trying to take baby steps with this guy, and you know, credit to the front office for sticking with him, not giving him a phantom IL stint, not sending him down with an oblique strain, or, you know, I'm putting that in quotes. And, you know, he's another guy that had to learn trial by fire at the major league level. You know, we definitely saw the growing pains. You know, there were starting to have some murmurs coming out of the clubhouse, which is super unusual for this organization. And, man, I know you hit home runs in bunches, but this is a different level of bunches. You know, I think he had, what, 3 in the Cubs series. The offense didn't go to Oakland, so, like, whatever. And then, you know, 2 yesterday. So, you know, it's been really nice to see. This is a guy that, you know, Red Sox Nation is kind of looking at as a potential cornerstone of the infield, a cornerstone of the future. And if we can kind of, you know, we don't need him to be hitting 350, but, you know, if he can hit that 250 with 2 home runs out of, you know, a series, heck, I think a lot of us would owe apologies like we have for Duran. We're going to be writing a lot of letters here as Red Sox Nation pretty soon.
Yeah, the Casas one was the biggest one for me. Multiple hits, multiple games, multiple runs scored. You know, you're right, Cody, a home run every game. In that third game, he did start. He was a pinch hit home run. So why he wasn't in that game to begin with when he was hot and literally 3 or 4, I don't remember if it was multi-hit game both times, but why you're sitting a hot bat like that blows my mind. You know, you lost game 2 and they ended up winning game 3. They just ran away with it. But yeah, I mean, this is a potential interesting cornerstone piece. Like you mentioned, you got Casas at first, Devers at third, Marcelo Mayer maybe in the future, maybe a year away. You have Trevor Story at second, and then you have your outfield already set too for the most part. You got Duran, Verdugo, and Yoshida. So now it's, okay, now we need to get a bona fide catcher to support Wong because Reese isn't, you know, Guar's not getting it done. the other guy's not getting it done, and we just need pitchers. I think this team is so close. We're so close.
Charlie, Terry. I think you got a static attack coming on by the sounds of it. But anyway, Charlie made a good point. You know, Scherzer's not going to, well, Scherzer won't, but Casas won't forget that day. You know, that he hit two off of Scherzer. And Scherzer's one of the three greatest pitchers of this generation. Verlander is the other, and Clayton Kershaw is the other one beyond him. All three of them have three Cy Youngs apiece. Verlander, in my opinion, the audience, you know, if they've listened long enough, knows I think he's the greatest, Verlander. And he's got the most rings of the three. Scherzer has one, and so does Kershaw, but 2020 doesn't count. So it was a big moment, you know, for Casas to take him deep. And when you look at Casas earlier in the season, I mean, we all bagged on him. I think just about every one of us wanted him sent down just so he could regroup, clear his mind, and they kept him up. And, you know, I think they got a lot more cautious with him. They sat him against lefties a lot more often. And gradually, you know, he got into his groove. And I don't think it can get any worse. I think he's experienced the lowest of his lows at this point. I don't think he's going to go on a slump nearly as bad. Now, he's off the charts right now. He's hitting well over 300. You know, with the average, and his OBP is over 4. And, you know, that'll come down a little bit, but the dude is really taking off, and it's good to have Turner, you know, to play first against those lefties, but man, he's on missile lock right now. He is just crushing the baseball, and if he's not crushing it, you know, he's getting timely hits to keep the line moving, as this offense has done all season, really. You know, I mean, this offense has bailed out the pitching staff big time in ways that it doesn't happen for the most part. I mean, you've seen teams with great offenses not make the playoffs because the pitching has been trash. I think the Angels are a good example. You know, you got Trout and Ohtani, but the pitching just falters and they don't make it. So, you know, I talk about Devers being a big possible contributor for an October run. And I think Casas could be another piece of that. So great series for him, hitting every game, 6-for-10. Drew walks in 2 of the games, so we'll see what he does. I wonder if Heim Bloom's call, if his text messages, email inbox, whatever, I'm wondering if he's fielding any Tristan Casas phone calls. Would you give him up? And I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't. And also, I didn't think he was going to struggle this year like he did out of the gates. I was one of the optimists this season, and this offseason, I mean, and he was basically untouchable to me, but there were so many people willing to put him in a trade package, you know, to send him to the Marlins to get one of their starting pitchers, whether it was Lopez or that Edward Cabrera. But yeah, he's been solid.
Absolutely. And I have been very wrong about him for the last month or so. I mean, we were all really frustrated because we wanted things to start going in our direction. It took a little while. And I think people just forgot that patience is a virtue, and you got to wait. Some of these things you just have to wait. And this was one that, thank God, we did, because had we packaged him and we're watching Tristan Casas hitting moon bombs for another team next year, this is, I mean, Terry, 30 home runs is not out of the question for this guy. it's very possible.
What's he at right now? Let's see.
14 or 15, I think.
He is at, yep, 14. Wow, he's only got 36 driven in. I feel like it's been way more than that, but.
Well, his problem is that he hasn't really knocked in a lot. Like, he'll hit them in bunches. If he's getting his runs knocked in, they're usually coming by way of the home run. So that's really been the thing. If you take away his home runs, he really hasn't been knocking in any runs with people in scoring position, at least not this month. You have to go back to June to see any of those games. So it's been tough. It's been really hard, but hopefully a sign of things to come. A couple other honorable mentions for this series. You had, obviously we talked about Jaren Duran briefly earlier, four singles, a stolen base, another home run, three runs scored. Had a weird situation where he was picked off on one play, and then there was a situation where he went from first to third, then the ball was overthrown. It looked like Cookie Carrasco interfered with him, preventing him from, allowing him to score. And it brings back 2013 World Series vibes, where he probably should have been awarded home, because when Duran gets thrown out trying to score basically from first, you want to think that maybe, this could potentially be some momentum going the New York Mets way. Luckily, it didn't go that way. We're very, very lucky. A couple other names: Brandon Bernardino, 2 2/3, five strikeouts, only one earned run. And James Paxton continuing to be elite, seven strikeouts, only two earned in six innings of work. Excuse me, on three hits. Anybody else that you gents wanted to mention?
Jolly Rodriguez continues to be dominant, coming back from injury as well. So pitched tonight in the finale, one inning. Got a strikeout in there, but some of his appearances lately, he's been punching out more than one batter. So it's rare. I mean, if this continues, I shouldn't say that he's arrived necessarily, but if this run continues for him and Bernardino continues what he's doing, how many teams have two extremely solid lefties out of their pen? And the Red Sox certainly haven't in quite some time.
Right. We'd have to look into that one to find out. Right on. All right. So let's shift into our duds. Cody, why don't you hit us with your dud?
Oh man, this is always my least favorite part of the show, especially after good series wins, right? You know, like we had just mentioned, a lot of studs to pick from. My dud, a little bit of a cop out here, but I think some attention needed to be brought to it, is Alex Verdugo. 0-for-7, I think three strikeouts and a walk. Only played 2 out of 3 games. Maybe he got that third game off as just like a mental breather from Cora, or something to kind of get him to figure it out. But he's been slumping something fierce recently. Last 30 games, 246, and the smaller the sample size becomes, the worse numbers those end up becoming. I think he's hitting 127 over his last 15 games, and the guy just kind of looks lost at the plate. I don't know if he's, not seeing the ball out of the hand well, or what's going on. But, he's the catalyst of this offense. He's the heart and soul. He's one of the engine guys. This lineup is doing very well. We talked about it in previous shows, top five in a lot of important offensive categories. And, clearly this team can still put up runs in bunches, put hits together like you wouldn't believe. But this lineup looks a lot more scary and a lot more dangerous when he's in the mix and contributing, opposite field doubles, moving on the base paths. And I don't know what he needs. I don't know what this prolonged slump, I think, Terry mentioned it, was one of the longest, if not the longest, of his career. But if Verdugo can get right and the rest of the offense can keep humming, we're going to be cooking with gas.
Absolutely, Terry.
It's the biggest slump of his career. It's got to be one of them. I mean, the dude is just not hitting well. 0-for-7 this series. Let's just keep going backwards here. Last series, he was 1-for-11. Go back to the series before that. one for eight. I mean, this is painful. Like, he is just not hitting the ball. Go back to the first A series. Well, that was his last good series. So, you know, first part of July, he was 4 for 8 in that one. Multiple hits in both games that he played. So it's been since then that, you know, he's been in a steady rhythm. And so hopefully he figures it out. But he certainly lost the leadoff spot to Jarren Duran, it looks like. I mean, Duran just absolutely cranking right now. I think hitting .317 on the season, and a sample size that gets bigger by the week. Every time we come on here, bigger sample size. So hopefully Verdugo figures it out. I mean, he's a good hitter, probably somewhere in the 5 through 7 part once he gets it back together.
You know, what's crazy is I actually just had to take a quick look at Verdugo. You mentioned 7 for 55, 127 batting average. And outside of that Oakland series where he went 4 for 8, he's 3 for 47, which is bad enough for an .063 batting average. He's in the midst of a 1 for 22 span. He's had one RBI in his last 7 games. He has not scored a run, and he's actually struck out in all but one of those games at least once. So the strikeout numbers, which has been something that isn't an issue for him, is starting to creep up. He's walking all right, but the batting average, it's completely disappeared. It's just, he wasn't hitting home runs last month. He only hit one in the month of May. He went from a .276 to a .316 clip. He had a couple home runs in July, but 2 of his 7 hits are home runs, which is insane. I really don't know what to call or what to make of it. I'm hoping he can bounce back, because he's in the process of potentially hitting the worst he's ever hit. And it doesn't seem to be getting better if he's not able to put the bat on the ball. A 127 month is something you're going to want to forget about. And that's definitely something he's going to want to forget about as soon as possible. But if he needs to take the extra, you know, day or 2 days off, whatever, take it, because we need him back.
And he did get, you know, a day off today. I think he'll figure it out. I mean, one of the things I love about Verdugo is how calm he is in the batter's box. Just very calm. It's not like he's even in the batter's box. It's just like he's just standing around, you know, just taking it all in. And I don't know how many times we've seen Kike Hernandez in a high leverage situation, and you can tell that Kike is pretty amped up, and you know, it affects his plate discipline at times, and Verdugo's just never that guy. So that's what gives me the confidence he'll eventually figure it out and start, you know, making pretty good contact again. I mean, he's on pace still to hit the most doubles he's ever hit in his career. So we'll see. I gave a take that he could be traded at the deadline, and this cold streak, maybe it makes Bloom a little bit more open to that. So we'll see.
Well, I certainly hope it's not the case, because, you know, for obvious reasons, you don't want to trade away the last remaining piece and the Mookie Betts deal, because really then you're left with Connor Wong. You know, you basically gave Mookie Betts away for nothing, and it's, you know, he's doing all right. He's doing his thing. I mean, all the former Red Sox players that are playing for the Dodgers are doing some big things over there, which is, you know, disappointing. But then again, Justin Turner for us is doing things that he wasn't really doing his last year in LA. So it ebbs and flows, and that this is just one of those situations. But to Verdugo, I'm with you, Terry. I think he's going to figure it out. He will bounce back, because the guy's a gamer. He's a stud. He's a star. And it's just going to be a matter of time. And when he clicks back in, we're going to completely forget about this bad spam. Why don't you hit us with your dud?
My dud is Heim Bloom for trading Ryan Brazier, who is hitting .138 in 12 appearances with the Los Angeles Dodgers. ERA well over 7 with us, .138 in L.A. And maybe my dud shouldn't be Heim Bloom. Maybe it should be Dave Bush, because that guy just, He can't figure out anyone. But I'm kidding about the dud. The stat was real. Brazier's really crushing it out there. But my dud is going to be Cutter Crawford. And Crawford hasn't really looked good as of late. And I think this is kind of closer to the real Cutter Crawford. My expectations were not high for him this season. He had a couple of blips early on and then kind of settled in, and we've needed him to give the performances he had during that good run, you know, with all the injuries we've had. And now I think the league is kind of catching up to him, and he's not a guy that's really going to blow you away. And if he can't, you know, paint the corners and, you know, get guys to swing and miss, what is he? You know, he's a fringe major leaguer. And, you know, this is a Mets offense that really couldn't do much with anyone else. You know, Paxton gave up 2 earned. Murphy gave up, well, Garza gave up 3. But, I mean, he's obviously the worst pitcher on our 40-man roster right now. Certainly worse than Crawford. But Crawford was the one guy that the Mets really got to. And, you know, he's not going quite as deep into games. The punch outs aren't what they were earlier in the season. So, you know, the Red Sox really need Chris Sale and Tanner Houck to hurry up and get back before, you know, before the floor really drops out.
I had to look up the Ryan Brazier one because I didn't think there was going to be yet another Boston Red Sox that was going to enjoy pitching outside or playing outside of Boston. That brings the list of former Red Sox that are just dominating in LA to 4. Mookie Betts, JD Martinez, Mookie Betts, JD Martinez, Ryan Brazier. That's 3, unless I'm missing one, because we have a lot of former Dodgers now playing for the Red Sox. I think it's just the 3 of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Kike could be going back there. That's what the rumors are.
I don't think that's going to happen. If he goes anywhere, if he leaves Boston, that's the only team that I think people would be cool with, because I think if you trade or let go of Mookie Betts, sorry, not Mookie Betts. With Kike Hernandez, you're literally just alienating any future stars from wanting to come to Boston. It's a bad look if we end up letting him go. But that's insane. Wow. Cody, anything you wanted to add to that first bit?
Yeah, he has been trending in a manner that is not obviously burgeoning confidence, right? You know, he's kind of the guy we're like, okay, we got a third starter. You know, he's put together a nice little season so far. We can definitely say he's pitched better than we've expected. He's never really, I think this is probably, if we were to look it up, my internet's running a little slow here. I apologize. This might have been one of his worst starts since kind of that Pirates start, right? When I was watching that game, I think he got Alonso out in the second inning, and Alonso said something to Alvarez, and immediately thereafter, there was hard contact after hard contact, loud outs, and then those two-run home runs started coming. So I don't know if there was something that the Mets maybe picked up on him when he was pitching, if he was tipping or in some capacity. I was unable to watch the game with sound, so I don't know if they made any mention of it on the broadcast, but you know, maybe that's something that the team can go back and look for. You know, probably not Dave Bush. Looking at you, Terry. Maybe, you know, it was just a fluke occurrence and they spotted something. They were able to pick up on something, and that's why they were able to get him for a couple of runs. Hopefully that's the case, because we can't really afford for him to not really be taking the ball every, you know, fifth day for us.
His outing with Texas was brief. You know, he gave up 7 hits, 3 earned in 4 innings, and only struck out, only 3 strikeouts, in that outing. And, Colorado, you're going back to June with that one. That wasn't, super spectacular either. So we'll see. I mean, he's not going to lose his rotation spot though. That's for sure. We get some of those guys back, but Charlie.
He's going to continue in the rotation because
I mean, lest we forget, like, yes, the Mets' performance is ugly. The Texas one wasn't beautiful, but he threw one, allowed one hit in six innings against the Cubs, struck out nine in that game. So there is magic there. It's just, how do we make lightning strike with him? Because he's had these moments, he's had these games where he looks like he can get it, like Minnesota, six hits, five innings, but just going down the line. He's had more ugly appearances than good ones, and maybe people are going to call that six-inning appearance against Chicago an outlier, but at the present moment with the condition, the state of the Boston Red Sox, he's not leaving the rotation. There's no way. It's just not going to happen. Anything else we want to add on Cutter Crawford? So my dud, and literally part of me wanted the dud to be Carlos Fables over at third base, who just seemed like an absolute hot mess. My dud for this one was Jorge Alfaro. I'd need to take a second to like process this again because I have to relive the moment in my brain when Jaron Duran in the fourth inning and in a two-run lead throws the ball home and Jorge Alfaro misses the second base like completely. Fires an absolute wild pitch into center field past Jaron Duran that goes all the way to the warning track, allowing McNeil to score along with the two runners that were already on base. We're now losing 3-2 because of a you just couldn't hold the damn ball. You are not a defensive gem. You can't hit worth a damn. You're literally hitting 149 on the year. I really don't know why we felt, oh yeah, we need to get Jorge Alfaro. Honestly, I think it was because of that one moonshot he hit in Worcester. That's literally it. I just, this guy is not it. I don't want to see him again. And, you know, I get it. Connor Wong isn't great. He's not the most spectacular. He's not the sexiest catcher that Major League Baseball has to offer. But Jesus, Alfaro. Please don't let him catch again. That was absolute brutality. People are going to be running on that arm at will because they know there's a 50% chance that ball is going to go into center field. I don't want to see it again. Cody.
I bet, you know, Duran was just thrilled that the reason he was chasing a ball to the wall in center wasn't his fault this time. The fundamentals were on full display this weekend in an unfortunate manner. You know, game two obviously reared its ugly head with the Alfaro throw. And, you know, you can deal with those. Well, maybe not that play in particular, but you can deal with some defensive miscues if he's swinging a hot bat and he just hasn't kind of propped up his value with the lumber at this point. So definitely worthy of being on the dud list. Not really a lot to say, I guess, you know, it kind of just makes us grateful for Connor Wong.
Terry.
Not a ton to add. I mean, I don't really know what the fallback option would have been once McGuire went down. The good news is he is going to be back within 2 to 3 weeks, I think, from that oblique injury. So I don't think Alfaro is long for this team, but I think he will continue to be, you know, put at catcher, you know, one every three or one every four games, just to keep Wong from completely breaking down. But I think you're seeing why every team seems to give up on him, because he was once a highly touted prospect in the Marlins system. And, you know, he's bounced around and, you know, I think his defensive woes at catcher have really hurt him. He had a cup of coffee with the Colorado Rockies earlier this year, got called up, but I think they were using him primarily as a DH. So the Red Sox, when they called when they called him back up to bring him back, I guarantee you they had to assure him that he would, in fact, be catching some games, because why come all the way back to Boston, you know, just to be jerked around a little bit more?
We messed up on that one, too. I think that was an absolute awful, awful bring back. That just was an absolute mess. And I'm over this so hard. I don't want to see him catch any more games. If that's the production and that's the level of skill that we're going to have behind the plate, you're going to be able to give runners on first base a free bag, because they know that if that's the arm that he's going to be using to throw down to second base, I mean, that's a noodle arm. You're going to run on that all day. He's not a threat. And assurances aside, if we're going to be shipping Kike Hernandez, because people seem to forget that he's still a decent player if he can come off the bench every once in a while, what the hell's Alfaro doing here? Like, if you're going to be calling for Kike to be gone, you've lost any ounce of credibility or sense if you think that Alfaro should still be here. I think if you're trying to ship out Kike and keep Alfaro, you're an idiot. So that's my two cents on that one. Anything else you just want to add on that guy? Cool. Dishonorable mention for this one. The real glaring one was Garza. He allowed 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning, all 3 earned there. That was brutal. That almost became a situation where after, you know, what we thought was going to be, okay, cool, sure bet, we're winning this game, we're now up 8-3. We allow 3 runs in the top of the 9th, and we actually almost allowed the New York Mets to get back into this one. So for me, that was the major dud. Outside of him, I couldn't really think of any others. Anything else you two wanted to add?
Well, with Garza, I mean,
he's brutal.
Of all the dumpsters we picked the Anaheim Angels dumpster. So, I mean, there you go.
If you want to look back at it, this guy's an ERA of 23 in the month of July. He's only had 3 appearances. The last time he did not allow a run in an appearance was June 19th. Each of the last 5 appearances and 6 of the last 7, he's allowed at least 1 run. And 4 of those 6 appearances, he's allowed 2 or more. This guy doesn't have it.
I mean, he's got to just be like an innings eater and a blowout one way or the other kind of game, right? Because he keeps getting put into a situation or keeps getting put into the games. And like you mentioned, he just doesn't have it. You know, maybe he needs to go down to AAA again, retool some things. Maybe we can find something, or maybe, you know, he goes to that other team in Los Angeles. But yeah, he creates something out of nothing quite often, and not in a good way.
Yeah, I'm over this experiment too. He can go. I'm done. Anything else either one of you gents want to add? Right on. Well, that is going to do it for all of us tonight. We want to thank all of our loyal listeners and our first time listeners as well. We appreciate all of you. Everyone have a great night. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.